Medina. 011-9664-828-2222. Ladies and gentlemen, these were our sponsors from Canada and Saudi Arabia. Last week, we presented to you development of Mecca, which was appreciated by everyone around the country. Now, we are going to present to you development of Medina. In the meantime, I would like to thank you, and especially Bin Laden Group, who made this beautiful documentary in Saudi Arabia. As usual, I will request to you again, please do inform your friends that in few seconds, we are going to start showing to you a beautiful, beautiful documentary, Developments of Medina.
And maintained by such as believe in Allah and the Day of Judgment. Establish regular prayers and practice regular charity, and fear none at all except Allah. It is they who are expected to be on true guidance.
The Prophet's Holy Mosque in Al-Madinah Al-Munawwarah was chosen by Allah as a place where rewards and prayers are multiplied. Furthermore, it represents the most important stage in Islam, the foundation of the Islamic State. Here, in the first year of Hijra, the Prophet made his house and mosque. The original layout, a simple courtyard measuring 805 square meters, became the exemplar for the design of all mosques. Sixteen months later, following the change of Qibla, another covered area to accommodate worshippers was constructed against the south wall. In the seventh year of Hijra, the Prophet enlarged the mosque by 2,475 square meters, adding several more chambers to the east. In the 17th year of Hijra, the mosque was extended by Khalif Omar bin al-Khattab. In the 29th and 30th years of Hijra, the Khalif Othman bin Affan not only enlarged the mosque, but also replaced much of the structure with more permanent materials. Between 88 and 91 Hijra, under the orders of Al-Walid bin Abd al-Malik, the mosque was extended to encompass the tomb of the Prophet, and minarets were introduced. In 162 Hijra, the Khalif al-Mahdi enlarged the mosque to the north. Between 879 and 895, Sultan Qait Bai renovated the mosque and extended the eastern side, constructing a stone dome over the tomb of the Prophet. Under Sultan Mahmud II, the dome was rebuilt, and by 1253 Hijra was painted green. Sultan Abd al-Majid made extensions both to the north and east. A contemporary description in 1275 Hijra describes the mosque with five minarets. For the next century, the mosque remained relatively unchanged, though the number of pilgrims continued to rise steadily. Prophet's Mosque is an important place for all Muslims to visit. By 1368 Hijriya, the increasing numbers led to a royal decree from His Majesty King Abdul Aziz As-Saud to build a new extension. In 1372, his son and successor, His Majesty King Saud bin Abdul Aziz, laid the foundation stone and initiated work on the extension. Equipment and machinery were limited, so most of the work had to be done manually. Yet the response to the need to enlarge the Prophet's Mosque was so great that within 5 years, the project was completed. The extension more than tripled the size of the Prophet's Mosque, but its completion coincided with changes that would have put both the mosque and the city of Medina under increasing strain. With the advent of commercial air travel, the numbers of pilgrims began to rise dramatically, from 100,000 in 1375 to 1,000,000 in 1390. And 2 million later in the decade. Some experts were predicting this figure would reach 5 million within a certain decade. In 1393, King Faisal ordered shading constructed to accommodate the rising numbers of visitors, but this could only serve as a temporary expedient. A more permanent solution had to be found. In 1402, King Fahd bin Abdul Aziz As-Saud decreed that the Prophet's Mosque should be extended once again. After 3 years of careful study under the personal supervision of the custodian of the two holy mosques, a design was arrived at which would extend the mosque to 5 times its present size, making it 100 times larger than the original mosque built by the Prophet. On the 9th of Safar, 1405, the custodian of the two holy mosques laid the foundation stone for this ambitious new extension. The work was scheduled for completion in just 6 years. The highest quality materials and most advanced building techniques would be employed in its construction. The vision of the custodian of the two holy mosques was to create a center that would provide the finest facilities and services for both worshippers and citizens. So a master plan was drawn up to encompass the whole of Al-Madina Al-Munawwara. The old city center had long since come to serve a largely transient population of pious visitors. Attempts to modernize these old and crumbling neighborhoods only served to emphasize their inadequacy. One of the first tasks of the project was to demolish them. All demolition work was accomplished without the use of explosives. The traditional housing, made of clay reinforced with palm leaves, was easily dealt with. But modern reinforced concrete structures presented a much more difficult and dangerous problem. The solution developed by the engineers was to weaken the structure to a carefully calculated point, then pull out the remaining supports with bulldozers. deadline for completion demanded that clearance operations continue day and night. Demolition and clearance was in progress, every effort was made to minimize disruption to the daily life of the city. Roads, pedestrian pathways, and temporary parking sites were constructed to facilitate access to the mosque. Access to the mosque was given priority throughout all stages of construction work, so that worshippers could continue to fulfill their duties without hindrance.
Allahu Akbar!
Of Muharram, 1406 Hijriya, excavation work for the foundations began. The area surrounding the old mosque was found to be an unstable mixture of clay, silt, and sand, making it necessary to apply the most advanced foundation technology. More than 8,500 load-bearing piles were sunk, sometimes as deep as 54 meters, to rest upon solid bedrock. The position of each pile was calculated by structural engineers and pinpointed on site by teams of surveyors. Steel casings were hammered into the ground to guide the augers in the first stage of drilling. As the shafts got deeper, a fluid mix made from a granulated clay called bentonite was pumped in to prevent the sides from collapsing. Load-bearing places, double steel casings were positioned for the addition of a shock-absorbent jacket. A thicker mix of bentonite, pumped into the space between the inner and outer casings, formed a protective gel, cushioning the piles against lateral and seismic stresses. A heavy chisel was used to break through any last obstructions. Samples brought up at this stage were inspected by engineers to make certain genuine bedrock could be reached. High-yield reinforcement steel was welded into cylindrical cages 12 meters long. These were lowered into the boreholes, one length joined to the next, until bedrock was reached. More than 100,000 cubic meters of concrete needed for the piling was mixed on site, and every batch tested for quality. The concrete was pumped through tremie pipes extending to the bottom of the pile shafts, and left to set for 28 days. Ultrasonic sensors lowered through the core confirmed the consistency and integrity of the set concrete. Selected piles were subjected to stringent load-bearing tests as part of the rigorous quality control program embracing all aspects of foundation work. The piles were then prepared for capping. In key load-bearing places, configurations of piles were linked together by steel reinforcement mesh. By this method, the piles were tied into the basement floor slabs, ensuring the monolithic functioning of the structure. The executive engineers made frequent and regular site visits to oversee progress. The basement floor was cast in 95 sections divided by expansion joints. With blocks weighing up to 25 tons apiece, the load had to be carefully balanced for the 750-kilometer journey to Jeddah. Here, all the granite was processed at a factory specially set up for the project. This factory, one of the largest of its kind in the world, can process up to 1,000 cubic meters of granite a month. Blocks were sorted and graded for quality, then given a code number so that each piece of granite could be traced through every stage of production. Giant gang saws ran day and night cutting the blocks into slabs. The slabs were then fed through a series of grinding tools, producing a polished, hard-wearing surface. Not all the granites for the extension were polished. Pink Bakri for the upper part of the walls was flamed. The flame jet causes the quartz crystals on the surface to explode, resulting in an attractive hammered finish. Diamond-tipped saws cut the slabs into cladding bricks. To speed up on-site assembly, some of the bricks were slotted and drilled ready for the fixing brackets. In cutting profiles for cornice sections, the precise movements of the saw blades were controlled by a metal probe running over a template. After polishing, the profiles were inspected to make sure each piece would join seamlessly with its neighbor. The cornices are made from a dark pink Reziza granite, chosen to clad the lower part of the walls. Tons of granite were processed in this way, checked, coded, and crated, ready for transport to Medina. Plans had been drawn up covering every aspect of work on the extension. On these plans, each piece of granite cladding had been allocated a unique code number so that delivery schedules could be precise and on-site construction continue without delays. The cladding had to stretch round 900 linear meters of wall, needing 11,000 Raziza bricks and cornice sections. A further 120,000 bricks of Bakri granite were needed to clad the upper parts of the walls. 160,000 square meters of Abu Dhukar were laid for the piazza, entrances, and car parks. Smaller quantities of other granites were used for decorative contrast. Red Nujuf, from a quarry near Najran in the south of the kingdom, was turned into columns on a lathe, then polished to bring out the rich red colors of the granite. The installation of 250 red Nujuf columns around the main windows completed the granite cladding of the exterior walls. The King Fahd extension is designed to last not hundreds, but thousands of years, God willing. The granite cladding not only fulfills this need, but also enhances the elegant appearance of the exterior, with quiet, subdued colors eminently suited to a building devoted to worship. Most advanced trench cutting equipment began digging foundations for a retaining wall to protect the mosque's foundations. Two parallel trenches were dug down to the bedrock and reinforcement cages lowered in, one section welded to the next. And the wall itself were then cast in one complete piece, and excavation work resumed. Temporary bridges for access to the mosque were constructed over the excavations to remain in place until the car park's roofs were in place. The Prophet's Mosque is the largest single entity building in the world. To ensure sufficient light and air, the design incorporates 27 large open courtyards. The custodian of the two holy mosques decided that these should be covered by retractable domes to help control the environment within the mosque. The construction of the domes and their mechanisms was entrusted to three international companies renowned for their specialized engineering skills. It was most important that the shape and design of the domes should remain sympathetic to the project as a whole. The concept of a shallow dome was arrived at, a shape that would be both practical and aesthetically correct. It would complement the green dome without challenging its traditional dominance over the mosque. Sophisticated computer programs assisted in the task of designing the structure and its ornamentation. Once the custodian of the two holy mosques had given his approval for the design and ornamentation of the domes, the next stage was to build a full-size working prototype. When the custodian of the two holy mosques arrived in the Prophet's Mosque in Jumada Thania 1411 for his annual inspection tour, the prototype zone was ready for his approval. The presentation proved a success, and the custodian of the two holy mosques gave his royal sanction. Production of the remaining 26 domes began immediately in Germany. The specialized skills of a modern boat builder were called upon to manufacture the shells for the inner cladding. For lightness and strength, a wood epoxy laminate was built up on a mold, then sealed under vacuum. Plywood flanges stiffen the back of each shell. The facing layer is a pale Canadian maple, chosen to contrast with the darker Moroccan cedar of the ornamental work. Carving was done by hand, employing the finest craftsmen in Morocco. To add to the splendor of the ornamentation, both the geometric border and the double chain were gold leaf. Another enhancement to the design was supplied by the semi-precious stone amazonite. A good quality stone was eventually found in Kenya, and the mine reopened especially for the project. Pieces of amazonite were selected not only for quality, but also for a particular pale turquoise color. The stones were cut and polished and mounted in gold-plated bezels. In the cool of the night, work began on installing the interior shells of the domes. Eight-pointed star is traditionally one of the most favored in Islamic art. For the dome's outer cladding, curved aluminium molds were precision cut by computer-driven milling machines. Ceramic tiles were placed face down in the molds. A carbon fiber laminate was then bonded to the back of the tiles. The laminate was made so that its thermal expansion would match that of the ceramic tiles, and so minimize tension at the joints. When baked in an autoclave under vacuum, the result was an extremely solid graphite panel with a patterned ceramic surface. Thank you. white tiles complement the green dome, and because white reflects sunlight, help to reduce the temperature within the mosque. The finials for the domes were made in Switzerland. They were cast in solid brass, then gilded in gold. The finials provide the crowning touch to each of the 27 sliding domes. Everything had to be meticulously finished, even to a jeweler's standard, because the brass was then gold-plated. The slightest defect in casting is exaggerated by gold plating, so every part was inspected to make sure the work was perfect before being sent to Barcelona for assembly on the doors. Aspects of making of the doors, from choosing the timber to final assembly work, was overseen by a supervising team working directly for the Saudi construction company.
Like this. Okay. Yes. So now it's beginning to work better. We have it in the centre.
Yes.
Because it was off.
Doors are mounted on pins at the bottom and the top, and are so perfectly balanced that even though they weigh 2.5 tons apiece, they can be swung with the push of one finger. The final touch was to install gold-leafed glass in the fanlights. Unsurpassed materials and meticulous craftsmanship combined to form a series of dazzling entranceways into the Prophet's holy mosque. Interface connecting the old mosque to the new extension was the project's last major civil engineering challenge. The wall of the King Abdulaziz extension was breached with stone cutting saws and the gaps enlarged to allow easy passage between each area. Most demanding of all was constructing the artificial stonework of the interface. Special techniques were employed in manufacturing and erecting the stones to make sure there was a harmonious transition between the old and the new. With the installation of the world's largest gantry crane, work proceeded rapidly on the underground car park on the northern, western, and southern sides of the mosque. The two levels of decking are also designed to provide ablutions and other facilities for the comfort of visitors. Meanwhile, temporary pedestrian bridges continued to carry the throngs of worshippers who come to glorify the Lord of the Universe in the Holy Prophet's Mosque. In planning and building the new extension, the convenience and comfort of worshippers has been of the highest priority. For centuries, visitors to the mosque have had to endure severe extremes of climate. In winter, the weather is wet and cold. In summer, the daytime temperature can exceed 50 degrees Celsius. Many hundreds of thousands of people gathered together in this heat could create dangerously high levels of humidity. From the onset, the custodian of the two holy mosques had foreseen the need to incorporate a comprehensive climatic control system. On the outskirts of the city, a massive chiller plant was built. Using a vapor compression cycle, the plant is able to produce 17,000 gallons of chilled water every minute, to service one of the largest air conditioning systems in the world. The chilled water is pumped through insulated pipes along a utility tunnel to the mosque. The chiller plant is 7 kilometers from the mosque, and construction of the tunnel was a major engineering feat. The route moves through unpopulated country, beneath Wadi Akik, then under the city to the basement of the mosque. 14 kilometers of piping carry chilled water to the mosque and return warmed water to the chiller plant. Work, begun during the initial months of the project, at first progressed speedily. Within 2 years, the tunnel had reached the outskirts of the city. Here, progress was slowed down, as buildings had to be removed, and the depth of the tunnel lowered to avoid the planned route of future installations. Loose soil made excavations precarious, and work on shoring up the sides had to continue day and night to keep the project on schedule. To minimize disruption to the city, telephone cables, electricity supplies, and water services were rerouted along temporary bridges. In 1410 Hijriya, with just days to the start of Ramadan, the tunnel reached the Manaka underpass. The underpass was closed and the roof breached so that construction teams could dig down through the road and excavate for the tunnel. Working with great speed, the tunnel was built and the underpass reconstructed and reopened on the 20th of Ramadan, in time for the influx of pilgrims. Pipes were then laid through a short length of tunnel into the car park excavations to reach the mosque basement. Here, the chilled water services 86 huge air handling units. The basement itself acts as an air reservoir, being constantly replenished with fresh, filtered air from outside the building. Handling unit by a fan, the air is filtered before passing through a network of copper coils. Chilled water circulating through the narrow coils cools the air. The drop in temperature causes the moisture in the air to condense, reducing the level of humidity within the mosque. The conditioned air passes through a sound attenuator to reduce noise and along a network of insulated ducting to be distributed from vents set into the bases of the columns. 1 million liters of conditioned air can be discharged every second, guaranteeing a constant supply of oxygenated air to every part of the mosque. The system works in conjunction with the sliding domes, which are closed when the air conditioning is in use, and opened for light and air when the weather is suitable. Conditioning into the Ottoman mosque, two air handling units were sited in an underground chamber on the southern side. Ducting was then channeled through the Qibla wall. The air is propelled into the mosque through high velocity jets located beneath each window. Fresh air is discharged into the northern side through two handling units housed in attic enclosures. In the King Abdulaziz extension, it was possible to remove the floor and dig trenches to bring in the air ducting and other services. But for the climatic control system to work effectively, the two large open courtyards would need some kind of retractable cover. The engineers came up with an imaginative solution, installing 12 fully mechanized umbrellas. Although umbrellas like this had been made before, never had they been made on such a scale. Umbrella columns are connected to the air conditioning system and clad in marble with brass fittings to form a continuation of the mosque's interior. The armatures of the umbrellas are raised and lowered by a system of hydraulic pumps in the basement. Woven out of a special Teflon thread, creating an immensely strong microporous cloth, with the added advantage of being self-whitening in the sun's ultraviolet light. Umbrella shades an area of 300 square meters. Together, they close off the courtyards, supporting the air conditioning in the same way as the sliding domes. 7 kilometers away at the chiller plant, the supply of chilled water for the air conditioning system is controlled by a computer network and matrix. This control room acts as a slave to the master BACS, or Building Automated Control Systems room, in the mosque basement. Here, all the climatic control systems and utilities are coordinated. At the southeastern side of the mosque, the complex of site offices was removed. On the 5th of Dhulqa'dah, 1414 Hijra, the custodian of the two holy mosques laid the final stone, signaling the completion of the project.
بوضع آخر لبنة يوم الجمعة لله رب العالمين. هذه كمان هذا الخلطة كمان هذا كمان هذا كمان هذا كمان هذا كمان هذا كمان مقبولة. الله يطول عمرك ومن إخوانك ويقول الله يرحم الأموات.
الله يطول عمرك.
والأسف الملك عبد العزيز رحمة الله عليه. والدك جاء وقام خدمات كبيرة جدا. ولا أقول لأنك موجود لكن قام خدمات لها وزنها في بلتليان الحرام. كنت في خدمات بلتليان الحرام هنا في المدينة ودائما إن شاء الله على
الله. الله يطول عمرك رحمة.
The new extension, thanks to the patronage of the custodian of the two holy mosques, the ground floor can now accommodate over 180,000 worshippers. Excavators give access to the roof areas, where a further 90,000 can gather. The piazza will accommodate 450,000 more. At peak times, up to 1 million worshippers will be able to participate directly in the prayers at the Prophet's Mosque. A sophisticated sound system relays the prayers throughout the mosque and the adhan throughout the city.
أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله.
In just 6 years, the vision of the custodian of the two holy mosques had been brought to fruition. All who devoted their efforts to this most magnificent project can view the final result with satisfaction, knowing that their labors have been in honor of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, and for the glory of Allah, the Mighty, the Majestic.
Allah shall be visited and maintained by such as believe in Allah and the Day of Judgment. Establish regular prayers and practice regular charity and fear none at all except Allah. It is they who are expected to be on true guidance.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed the documentary Developments of Medina. The documentary Developments of Medina was jointly presented to you by
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allah. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله.
The Medina Oberoi, a five-star deluxe hotel overlooking Masjid al-Nabawi al-Sharif, offers the best in comfort with most modern services and facilities. Phone Medina 011-9664.